Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspire Health Podcast. And today we are doing our 12th episode in our newest series called The Illusion of Free Choice, A Return to Mastering Our Own Lives. And we are bringing back a former guest known as Guy Needler. And Guy joined us on our detox series for episode 145. I'll put that a link in the show notes. And we talked about spiritual detox and how to avoid karma. So if you haven't checked that out, make sure you go and listen to that. When you get into Guy's work, he's written volumes. There's a number of books, and I mean, yeah, we've got a bunch of them right here. So
there's more in our bookshelf, but
that's part of the library of books that we've got from Guy, and they are all really mind expanding books. Mm-hmm. So he's the author of a number of them, including The History of God, Beyond the Source, Avoiding Karma, Psycho-Spiritual Healing, The Origin Speaks, and The And Dialogues. And we came across Guy's work maybe a year ago.
Through RJ?
Yeah, through another guest of ours and friend of ours, RJ. And Guy's learned to traverse the frequencies and communicate directly with high-level energetic entities, with the ancient race called the Om, the source entity whom we call God, and the origin, the creator of the source entity and the co-creators. So for more information around that, you need to dive into Guy's books, but we've really enjoyed Guy's perspective and we wanted to bring him back for this series to help us shed more light on this concept of free choice and mastering our life. So Guy, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you. Pleasure to be back and seeing you again.
You as well.
Yeah, these are always conversations we look forward to having. I mean, as we go through your books, Taya's constantly writing down questions around stuff. So then it's so much fun for us to be able to actually bring you on and field some of these questions. Because as most people know that have been following us, we take you on our own personal journey. This is a journey that we embark on because we want to understand things more and understand the truth of things as best as we can. So we bring on people that we've really learn from or that we've really enjoyed their content, and we want to share that with you so that you can see what resonates and what doesn't. So Guy, maybe before we jump into the concept of free choice, which I think we'll get into in a little bit, can you give us from your perspective and what you understand as far as who exactly are we? I mean, as a human species, you know, there's lots of conversation around lots of different bodies. I know in health, we talk about a lot of different bodies of health, from physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. From your perspective, what are we as a human being?
Well, we're not the human body. That is absolutely for certain. We are basically energy and sentience, or a smaller aspect of energy and sentience is projected down from a larger body or larger volume of energy and sentience, which is what we really are. We sometimes call that larger body the higher self or the oversoul in Dolores Cannon's QHHT speak. The Hindus call it the Godhead, and I was told to call it the true energetic self. The true energetic self is sentience and energy. The aspect of what we really are is sentience. So we have something called the true sentient self, which is a bit above and beyond the energy side. But the energy side is what the sentience uses to experience, learn, and evolve in different environments. So as a human body, we are not the human body. The human body is just a vehicle that we use for a limited period of time or event space to, I've no doubt we'll go back to that later, to experience, learn, and evolve in a particular environment. Now, the Earth is just one environment where the human body is a useful vehicle because of the environmental conditions. Think of it this way. We are not our motor cars, but we drive our motor cars. So we're not a BMW, we're not a Mercedes, we're not a Kia, we're not a Toyota, we're not a Chevrolet. We're the driver of those vehicles. And that's what the soul is. The soul is this smaller individualized unit of sentience that drives a body. And so we don't, right now we're in this body called the human body. But next incarnation, or next time we want to experience existence in a lower frequency aspect of the universe, the physical universe, we could be in a different body that is in a different galaxy, a different planet within that galaxy, a different frequency that galaxy is manifest within.
Okay. And
I have a quick question. Guy, when you say sentience, does that mean like an aspect of God that is coming and working itself through us?
Well, if you look at there's a structure. Believe it or not, there's a structure. The overall structure of sentience and energy is something we've got on top to call a source entity, which we call God. There's individualized units of that sentience that is used by the source or God to experience the minute detail of itself. And those individualized units of sentience and energy are what our higher selves are, our true energetic selves, or Godhead or Oversoul. Each of those units of sentience has the capability of further projecting smaller versions of themselves further into the minute detail. So those are what we call souls. We're on top to call the aspect. And there's a further level of structure, which is when us as souls can project smaller units of our own sentience and energy into other bodies, human bodies as well. But the level of sentience is not the same. It's dramatically reduced. So we have a structure. We have source, higher self or true energetic self, Godhead, Oversoul, aspect or soul, means the same word, and then a shard or a subsoul. That's the way to think of it. And most of us have probably one or two shards or subsouls projected from us. Some don't. And there are the potential for each of the higher selves to project 12 aspects or souls into various different functions within the multiverse environment, not just the physical universe as we know it. And there's also potential for us as souls to project up to 12 shards or subsouls into various different parts as well. Now, all of these things happen not when we incarnate, but when we're in the energetic and the higher frequencies, where we can function correctly according to our evolutionary level and the frequencies associated with our evolutionary level.
Jason and I were having a chuckle just before speaking with you because we didn't do it intentionally, but we just realized that you are your recording would be the 12th episode that would be airing within the series. And we thought, of course. So there's definitely significance with the number 12. So just to reiterate, so there's this whole energy and or body of what you refer to as origin. And within the origin is where the true energetic self resides. And then from the energetic self, then there's the projection of up to 12 aspects. And from the aspects, there's then the possibility of projecting further into 12 shards. Mm. And you had mentioned with regards to that even as well, as far as the breakdown, like where, how does the origin maintain its level of power or sentience?
Mm. Well, the origin is a level above the source. So for those listening, what's just been described as the origin is actually the source. The origin is a significantly larger volume of energy and sentience, and it itself has created these 12 smaller individualized units of sentience and energy to be able to accelerate its own knowledge of self. So where do they reside right now? In my understanding, right now, and that's changing dramatically with my latest book, by the way. Mm-hmm. Right now, they are existing within the first level of 12 levels of structure. There is apparently 12 main levels of structure, and inside each of those main levels of structure, there's 12 levels of structure. So if I was to just describe the first three levels within the first of those levels, we've got frequencies, subdimensions, and four dimensions. And then we have others above that. We have zones, continuum, et cetera, up to 12. And then once we've done that, we then go into the second group of 12. But the interesting thing is that the volume, shall we say, associated, and therefore the finitude, therefore associated with each of those different levels, increases by the power of 12. So the number 12 is really, I mean, I'm not a numerologist at all, but it seems to be a significant function in everything we do. Not so much in terms of the structure of the origin, but the structure of the source and how we associate ourselves and are able to divide ourselves or individualize ourselves.
Well, and it comes up so much in different things, like, you know, 12 meridians and 12 cranial nerves. And there's, you know, 12 comes up in a lot of different areas too. So, you know, it sort of shows up right down into the physical when we're talking about it as well. Guy, what I'm wondering is for the regular person that's out there and the concept of life plan, I think this is something that a lot of people wonder about, this sort of intermix between what am I here to do? How do you even connect with your life plan? Is there a life plan that we actually come down here set up to try and move through? And I feel like, what's the interplay between sort of free choice and our life plan and destiny and that whole sort of thing? Where do they mix together and where are they separate?
Well, the life plan, so to speak, is something that we create based upon our desires to experience, learn, and evolve before we incarnate, before we potentially even consider the location, the frequency, and the body type that we incarnate into, and then obviously the environmental conditions and the potential, because we incarnate into a certain family, for example. So we have these things we want to experience. Now, those things are goals. So we have this feeling about wanting to be a doctor, for example, a teacher, an engineer. We might want to be somebody who's homeless. Yeah. We might want to be somebody who's the richest person on the planet. Those are the goals. The free will side comes into how we get there. Yeah. For example, and I use this example quite a lot, so if anybody's listened to some of the other lectures and the World Sangha recordings, I apologize. But if you want to go from New York to Seattle, yeah, the goal is to go from New York to Seattle. How you get there is up to you. You can fly there. You can walk there. You can hitchhike there. You can ride a bicycle there. Put a motorcycle there. Use a car there. Go on a bus. Go on a train, etc., etc., etc. Those are the ways in which you could achieve the goal, the life plan. But it's the depth and detail associated with those travel techniques that allow you to get the greater level of detail and the greatest level of evolutionary progression associated with those different methods. For example, if you flew from New York to Seattle, you'd get there very quickly, probably in 4 hours. But what would you see? The seat in front of you, the seat behind you, the passenger either side of you, in the middle row, and maybe some images outside of the window of what you're passing over. If you hitchhiked there, you'd experience a lot more. You'd experience the environment, the places you have to stop over at, the people you might be hitching with, experiencing what they're experiencing. You might be experiencing understanding the environment better because you might have to walk through it. You know, see, the depth and detail associated with our journey in terms of how we achieve our goals is part of our free will. We might decide that we don't want to walk all the way, we might want to catch a bus and then catch a train and then hire a car. You know, all these different things are the so-called rich tapestry of our ability to experience what we want to experience as part of our life plan. Now, there's a lot of conjecture about, oh, what happens if I fail my life plan? Oh, what happens now? Well, we have a lot of different potentials within our incarnation as to what those opportunities for experience are. And if we experience part of them, that's fine. We can always add on to it later, another incarnation. If we experience a lot of one and then nothing of another one, well, maybe it was important to experience that one and we can always do the other one later. So it's not important to whether we complete or even start a particular aspect of our life plan. They're goals, they're opportunities, they're things that, you know, it's like, for instance, it's like going into a theme park and saying, right, I fancy playing on the dodgems, but not doing the shooting exercise. Same thing.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative. Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Is it, I guess, a couple questions on that. Maybe first around choice, when you're talking about that we really can make all sorts of different choices depending on the experiences that we want to have. Is there a progression as we incarnate over and over again that we make choices that are more in alignment with who we are, as opposed to, you know, sometimes we make choices where it's like maybe we really resonate and feel a certain way that we should make a certain choice, but then we rationalize our ways out of it and do something that maybe turns out to be not so great. It's sort of being out of alignment with ourselves. As we incarnate more and more, do we tend to make choices that are more inherently aligned with who we are, as opposed to like, I guess that's what I'm wondering, because I feel like right now there's even sort of a conversation around when we're making our choices, where are we making them from? You know, which is it coming from the, as other people have talked, you know, is it coming from the small self or the ego mind identity, or is it coming from a connection to the higher self? How do choices look different from those places? And is that something that we're supposed to be even like evolving to? Is that something that we do move towards?
What we do right now is make choices based upon so-called logic. What appears to be the right thing. What we should be doing is be making our choices based upon our intuition or our clear sentience, which is connection to our higher self or Godhead or oversoul. So when we do make decisions, we tend to get opportunities with our own free will to go down a certain road in terms of the decision process we have. But we also have the opportunity to listen to our gut feelings, our intuition, our clairsentience, which is us knowing the bigger picture about what we need to do. But then we sometimes get the ego involved. And the ego is a function of our incarnation. It's a temporary personality created through the aspect or soul being almost totally cut off because of the low frequencies and the low communicative bandwidth from what we really are. So it starts to think in terms of, well, I'm here. This is what I am. I'm the human body. And it works with the constructs of that which it has learned over its incarnation. So then it starts to override those different things. So we have the choice. We have the choice of using logic or the ego, or we have the choice of using our intuition or clairsentience or higher levels of connectivity. The more evolved we are, the more chance we've got of using our higher functions to be able to make decisions. The less evolved we are, we tend to use logic. So the objective is to try to use more higher function decision-making processes and trust them. And as we trust them, then we get rewarded by that. And therefore, we become confident and we start to use them more. We rise to the frequencies. They get more and more accurate rather than using the logic side. Because the logic side tends to be wrong. We can prove a mathematical equation from the start of the question to the end of the answer by having the steps in between. That's the logical side of it. But the intuition would be, that's the question. Oh, that's the answer. Because the answer's already there. It's just that we don't have the information to justify why the answer is the answer, because we haven't used logic. We've used intuition or clairsentience. So that's, and therefore, in an existence where we're working with low frequency thoughts, behaviors, and actions, and therefore we need to use logic, if you can't prove it in a logical way, then it's incorrect. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely the world we're kind of currently living in. And mm-hmm. I think going through this transition in pockets of it where it seems like, you know, people are wanting to, and also I think they know an inherent truth around intuition, because it's such a strong feeling of knowing inside yourself that transcends logic. So yeah. Sometimes it's like, well, I don't know how I can prove it, but I just know that's the way it works.
Yeah. Well, certain scientists... if you ask a scientist in general how they could justify a particular discovery, they will say that they worked through different experiments and went through dead ends and then stopped those dead ends and went through another change and made minor changes and then they got to the end. Then they say, well, why did you go that route? And I say, well, it's gut feeling, which is totally irrational for a scientist to use, but they use that. And they get away with it. But when you try to present them a paper, for example, that says the same thing, they can't accept that, because there's no physical proof of what you're saying. There's no logical steps.
Sorry to interrupt. You had spoken about ego and how it's essentially disconnected from our higher self or the true energetic self. So then what role does ego play within our lifetime?
The ego, again, just to explain it again very, very quickly, is the personality that's created because we get isolated when we're incarnate. We're so far down the frequencies that our communicative bandwidth with our normal environment and our true energetic self is reduced down to almost zero. So it's like us normally being able to access everything in the internet instantaneously and knowing everything instantaneously, to using an abacus to try to access the internet. It just doesn't work. But the link is still there, clearly. So that means that when we start to interact or interface with a body, we start to almost get this sense, this higher sensory deprivation, and start to associate ourselves with the body and the environment the body's in. And that creates this personality, this temporary personality that is only associated with the aspect or soul in the body. And that's what the ego is, basically. But the thing is, the ego, deep down in its own egoic subconscious, understands that its existence is only relevant to the longevity of the host, the body that it's in. So basically it tries to maintain that existence as long as possible. So this is why we've got this fight or flight feeling within ourselves, where we do everything we can do to perpetuate our own existence. But the ego is never lost in totality. It's just that when we re-commune with our higher self, it becomes part of the overall energetic signature stroke personality. And therefore becomes like a drop in the ocean. It becomes part of it, not the dominant personality, it becomes part of the overall plethora of what we are. But it also recognizes that if we start to work on ourselves and become higher frequency, we do start to increase our communicative bandwidth a little bit, and then a bit more, and then a bit more. And so we start to be able to communicate in a very rudimentary way or very slow way with that and what we are. And in doing so, if we progress even further, we start to understand who we are totally, become aware, self-aware, and enlightened, trying to call those words. When we know that, we've basically mastered incarnation, and there's no need for the ego because it doesn't actually exist. It's just part of what we are. So it fears that, and it will do everything it can do to stop us from becoming a higher frequency. So in effect, what it does is it puts all sorts of doubts and fears and concerns and worries and, you know, conjectures in our mind to stop us from moving up the frequencies and becoming higher frequency and more connected. And it will even use our own spirituality against ourselves. Things like, oh, I don't need to do any further work. I've made it now. The work is never ending, you know. And the number of individuals who've hit that particular barrier and stayed there, and then they don't realize that they're slowly dropping down, because it's so easy to go down the frequencies compared to going up them, that the ego wins. And the ego is a really resourceful, ultimately patient and extremely sneaky aspect of us, but we do need it because we're here. So it is useful at times.
So Guy, when you had mentioned that, then is mastering our own life then when we transcend the ego?
We can never transcend the ego in terms of, because we're incarnate, because it's actually part of what we are while we're incarnate, but we can work with it. And, you know, we can sort of not so much, we can't compartmentalize it. We can't ignore it, but you have to work with it. But what we can do is move beyond it. So we can be in the physical, but not of the physical. We can start to be able to manipulate our environment. We can start to change our thought processes based upon a higher level of understanding and knowledge. And so we can become masters of our own destiny because we understand it. It's like previously we've had the stress and the concern about going from the outside of a maze, which has got 12-foot walls, to the middle of the maze, then coming out again. Whereas now we can see over the top of the maze and we know exactly the fastest route. That's the sort of difference. And so we can start to navigate through our incarnation without incurring any karma or links with people or low frequency thoughts, behaviors and actions, or addictions to physical things like materialism, status, wealth, you know, position, power, those sorts of things. And we just work through it, knowing who we are, what we've got to achieve, doing what we need to do to achieve what we need to achieve, and then moving on to the next, and leaving no ripples anywhere. And when we can do that, we've mastered the incarnation. We don't need to we don't come back. And that's where we get this ascended master terminology from, because we've mastered incarnation. We can come here. We interact with everything around us, but we interact in an absolutely perfect way. No karma, no links, no debts, everything.
Really clean. From that place, Guy, are you still tempted? Do you still get the temptations of the physical world, of the desires, of the addictions, things like that? Or from that place, is the temptation even gone?
They're always there. They're always part of what we are, part of our environment. But the issue is understanding that sometimes we go through an addiction, such as the feeling of the need to have something. Mm-hmm. But then when you've got it, it doesn't mean anything. You've just gone through the process of, okay, I didn't need it anyway, but I've got it. Ah, that's interesting. So it's almost like you've proven to yourself that you don't need it. You've weakened a bit to go to, okay, I need that, even though I don't need it. And then you've got it in its own. Okay, I've got it now. And it's meaningless. So then you can let it go totally. Now, letting it go totally could be, but you still own it, but it doesn't own you. Make any sense? Mm-hmm. It's you can give it away to somebody. I mean, I've given lots of different over the last couple of years with people having to work at home with their schooling and things. I've given about half a dozen computers away because I had a number of them which I'd sort of kept and I've just updated and not bothered to lose. So now I've given them away and it's done somebody some benefit. And it's those sorts of things where you realize that actually you can give it all away if you need to. You don't need it. Everything you have is within you.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You know, I think I remember hearing it once before. I was described as sitting down and having this wonderful dinner that you were enjoying, and then the doorbell rings and you have to get up and you have to step away from your dinner, and you're kind of okay with being there and loving and enjoying your meal, and at the same point you're totally okay with being able to step up and walk away from it and leave it there as well.
Yeah, it's I noticed a long time ago, fortunately, that the things that would affect me, disappointments, concerns, worries, no longer do. I just deal with them. You know, if something happens, I just, okay, what's next? This is an interesting experience. What's next? How am I going to get out of this? You know, for example, like you get to the airport and your flight's cancelled. Ah, right, okay. Hey, your car's in a certain airport, but the only flight you can get back to your own country is 200 miles away. So you have to think about, well, okay, I've got to get back to the airport. So you'd have to sort of work things out and not worry about it, but just treat it as something you've got to do. And doing that, you think supremely clearly. There's no panic, there's no emotion, there's no concern, there's no worries. No, and I've seen people, you know, have something happen to them and their whole world just fell apart around them. Whereas if the similar thing happened to me, it doesn't bother me, because the reality I've got is what I'm creating around me, which is everything is containable, everything can be dealt with. If I found out tomorrow that my body's got another 3 weeks to exist, I think, okay, that's interesting. let's see what I can do by work within those 3 weeks. that'll be it, because I know that I'm not the body. The body's just a vehicle.
Guy, I had experienced what you're speaking of after like going to a 10-day silent meditation in Vipassana, or after a week-long training at Thai massage. I remember my car actually got towed when I came out from maybe the fourth or the fifth day of the Thai massage program. And I came down and I was experiencing everything around me, including the incident that was before me, with such clarity. And I knew what I had to do. I knew that my cell phone was in the car and it was also towed. So I looked around to see where I can find another cell phone to borrow, to call. Anyhow, so the level of clarity and calm that you're speaking of in equanimity was very tangible and present at that time. How do you maintain that throughout everyday life, like without needing to step up and go into a cave and remove oneself completely from life and everything that surrounds us? How is one able to maintain that level of calm, clarity, and equanimity on a day-to-day basis?
Well, clearly at the start, we dip in and out of it. You know, we do have little moments of faltering, so to speak. But the way to regenerate that feeling is to just close your eyes and stop and breathe, and then visualize yourself in that other period when you were calm and collected, that other moment of concern or stress that didn't invoke panic within you. And place yourself there, and then place that version of you that was then into the now.
You know, that's what we used to do. I used to compete with in martial arts at a pretty high level for a long time. And before big tournaments, we would see someone that would work on us physically, kind of do naturopathic medicine, chiropractic, body work. And then we would see someone that would sort of tune up the mental part. And it was very much like that. We would connect to a feeling of in the past where we were in a real flow state, or in a feeling of confidence or power, whatever it might be, and then anchor that in to bring that into our competition. So I absolutely can understand that. And that's probably a good practice for people to connect to. And we would usually anchor it in, like I'd actually, you know, connect my fingers and sort of connect physically the sensation of it, so I could kind of bring it in when I wanted to.
Mm. So the other thing to do is to detach from it. Consider it like you're watching a film, or it's somebody else's problem, and you're helping them solve their problem. So you're not actually the person who's the primary beneficiary, even though you are. If that makes any sense, it's putting yourself over there somewhere rather than here, and seeing it as an outsider, and that works as well.
I think one of the things that you said that's really important around this concept is that there's a lot of still very practical action taking place when you are in this state. So a lot of times I feel like this is an important one for people to understand too, because sometimes we think that being in this sort of state, it's we're not really in the world so much, and we're not even able to function in the world in quite the same way. Things kind of overwhelm. You almost don't want to deal with anything. But what you're talking about is when you're in that state, you're actually crystal clarity and you're getting things done in the world very practically. To me, that's such exactly what you talked about, in the world, but not of it. You're in the world in the sense that you're dealing with exactly what you need to deal with clarity, not making extra ripples, but you're not in it in the sense that you're not being overwhelmed by it or... I think Jesus had said, wear the world like a loose garment. So it's there, but it's not burdening you down.
Yeah. I mean, an example of that is my brother is lives in New Zealand, a long way away. time zone wise, it's about, we're equal now, we're 12 hours. But in about 2 weeks' time, we're going to be 13 hours behind. And he's got dementia. So I've had to move him from one house to another house that we rented, and then move him from there to a one care home. We couldn't cope with dementia patients because they coped with older people, and then to another home. And so I had to move him three times from here, from the UK. And friends say, how did you do that? Well, basically, it's just the same as being in the UK. You phone up a moving agent, you talk to a letting agent, you know, you talk to the your previous landlord, and you just treat it as if you're in the UK. Okay, it's 12 hours away, you know, in terms of time zone, 24 to 30 hours away flight time, but it's the same thing. You're just doing it as if you're in the UK. And that was the way I treated it. It was just, okay, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do the other. And it, you know, phoned them up, talked to them via emails as well, or via WhatsApp, and it all fell into place. I have to say, though, it would have been a different story if I had to do it 30 years ago. Because of the ability to communicate now is supremely more efficient now than it used to be 30 years ago. But having said that, you know, I'd have still dealt with it, but in a different way.
I have a question for you with regards to what you just spoke of, and as far as going back to that particular place in time where you had a particular experience in order to reap the benefits of the way you interacted or we showed up within a stressful environment. The question that came up for me was, what role then does plant medicine play initially when someone hasn't had that experience of equanimity or clarity or connection to their spirit realm or the realm beyond the physical? And then how can that turn into an addiction like any other?
Right. So let's separate out the addiction from the plant medicine. Firstly, if the individual has no experience of anything spiritual or alternative from medicine's perspective, or should I say original rather than alternative, then they won't understand it, because unless they're taught or they have a natural interest, they'll turn off. So you don't need to tell them. You just need to say this is medication. You don't need to tell them whether it's standard medicine in terms of the Western world medicine, whether it's Chinese traditional herbal medicine, whether it's homeopathics, or whether it's, you know, some form of bachelor remedy, for example. You don't need to tell them what it is. Just say this is medication, it's going to be good for you, you know, and it'll help you to get better. But in terms of, you know, addiction to things like addiction to medicines, people get used to a physical focus that potentially makes them feel better, or that they think is maintaining their existence. And when people have that, taking it away from them will make them ill, because they believe that focus is keeping them healthy. So what we need to do with addiction is to say, actually, you don't need this, because, and you can tell them a story such as, you know, we've done blood tests and this isn't providing any additional help for you now. Your body is capable of maintaining itself on its own. Now, they might go through a bit of cold turkey, for example, if it's a narcotic of some sort, but you could say that's the body adjusting itself. So we have to work with them and describe things in a way that they will understand, but is not specifically putting them in down a road that they don't want to go down. So you have to be a bit of a chameleon. A true spiritual individual doesn't just work with spiritual people, it works with all sorts of people on their level. Doesn't mean you got to swear at everybody, or if you're speaking with people of a low frequency thought process. But what it does mean is we need to understand them and how they work, and then work in that way, still to their benefit, but in a way that they will understand. And that's the way to work. It's difficult.
What are your insights specifically with regards to ayahuasca or marijuana? I mean, marijuana, particularly in Canada, because we live here just on the West Coast, it's become so prevalent. It's become legalized, excuse me. And for the past 3 years, it's been legalized, and it's everywhere. It's at every corner. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on marijuana specifically, ayahuasca, mushrooms.
There's also lots of people that are engaging into things like ayahuasca or ibogaine in order to sort of break apart the barriers, I think, that they've been in to have a different experience. And I think what we're wondering is, where are the benefits of that, and are there benefits to that? And then when can that in itself actually be pulled into almost an addiction, that then we need that experience in order to, we're sort of outsourcing it to something else rather than from ourselves?
Well, quite clearly, the addiction is the experience. And with most narcotics, the experience is that the body is made so low frequency by that narcotic, whatever it is, that the, not so much with marijuana or ayahuasca, because it's not that powerful, but things like, you know, crack cocaine, crystal methyl, those sorts of things, you know, LSD in the old days, they reduce the frequency of the body so much, the soul can't stay there. So it gets ejected out, it leaves. But in a lot of cases, that leaving is done in a conscious way. So it's almost similar to astral traveling, for example. Depending upon how much of a shock it is to the body, depends upon how far the soul gets projected out or gets ejected out. So if they go into the lower frequencies, they start to get what's called a bad trip, where they start to see lower astral entities and other incarnate entities that are in the next frequency up. If it's a really bad shock to the body, they go even further. They may go to the sixth or seventh frequency, which is the higher level, the higher astral levels, where they start to see more benevolent or nicer astral entities, if you want to call it that, and other incarnate entities or even energy entities who exist on that level in this environment as well. So there you get the good and the bad trip. Now, they would seek the good trip because the good trip is what they enjoy what they're seeing. So what we've got there is an experience, an instantaneous experience based upon taking a physical product. Physical product could be ayahuasca, it could be magic mushrooms, it could be, yeah, et cetera, marijuana. The thing is, it's a mechanical method of experiencing what you can do through meditation, provided you're patient enough and dedicated enough and go deep enough. You can move the consciousness or the sentience out of the body and move around the environment and beyond the environment. So at the end of the day, why would you want to spend money on something that you can do for free? And why would you want to do something that the body gets damaged on? Because the function of the frequencies associated with drugs actually affects the soul as well. So it's not good.
Oh, can you speak a little bit more about that?
Well, in effect, it creates it makes the soul experience low frequencies itself, when the soul is actually a higher frequency volume of sentience and energy. And so that it scars it, was one way to describe it. And so when the soul leaves the body naturally, or the demise of the body, there's aspects of it which are affected by this low frequency exposure to things like drugs, etc. And so the soul, the aspect, can't re-commune with the higher self. It has to be sort of almost put in quarantine. In fact, I think I use those words in the AND dialogues, where the higher self or the trinitic self and the guide and helpers work with the soul to re-establish the overall frequency of the soul. Think of it like having a partially thawed product out of your freezer. Yeah. How many times have you been to a restaurant, for example, and you've had something like chicken or something or whatever, and some part of it is still frozen? That sort of thing, you know, because they haven't done the job properly. Well, it's same like that. Most of the soul is okay, the higher frequency, you know, the hot, squidgy chicken, for example. Not that I eat chicken, but yeah, this is the example. But right in the middle, it's still frozen, because that's the lower frequency aspect of the soul. And it's the same sort of thing. So we have to sort of thaw out, if you want to call it that, the soul, so that its totality is the same frequency as it normally is before it can re-commune with the Trinity itself or the higher self. But that low frequency aspect is a function of being connected to the body when it's shocked by the narcotic product, because it's so low frequency, it has to get out. But sometimes it doesn't get out fast enough. Or if there's constant exposure through addiction, then it creates the condition where it becomes low frequency. And that's when you see the drug taker not able to function properly.
Mm-hmm. That's really fascinating. I remember when I came across that content in the AN dialogues where you spoke about opiates specifically and morphine, I was blown away. And I mean, my background is Persian, you know, very home of opium, where there's been a widespread use of opium for many decades now, among the masses. But I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit more to that specifically, like which specific drugs that are routinely used for, you know, our loved ones, that can actually, and what happens exactly when they do take those drugs? What happens even with regards to the disincarnation process?
It slows it down. I mean, in terms of the disincarnation process, it slows it down. Mm-hmm. Because the soul is, again, a higher frequency volume of sentience and energy. And when it's exposed to continuous shocks of medication, whether it's marijuana, whether it's morphine, whether it's, you know, chemotherapy, et cetera, the soul becomes low frequency. It starts to freeze, using the chicken example. And so it can't detach properly. It needs longer to detach. And so the potential for the soul to be stuck in the body for a longer period is there all the time. So the objective is to try to do something that helps them overcome their focus on things like pain, or disability or dysfunction, without using a physical focus or product. And so we need to learn to either use some higher means, either hypnosis or meditation, so they can detach themselves from their physicality. And so then, once they've learned to detach themselves, they won't need to have the medication. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, not just stories, evidence that yogis can have major operations without the need for anesthetic. You know, people operating on their they're implanting kidneys or taking a kidney out removed an appendix, etc. No need for anesthetic because they're in control of their body totally.
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.